is Thursday, February 21st, 2012, 2013. The time is 2 p.m., 2:02 p.m. This is a meeting of the District of Columbia Rental Housing Commission. Location is the hearing room in Street 1140 North, 441 4th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. We're here pursuant to D.C. Law 6-10, the Rental Housing Act of 1985 as amended. I'm Chairman Peter Segedy Mazak, and I will serve today to chair this meeting. On my left is former chairman and longtime commissioner Ronald Young. On my right is Commissioner Marta Berkey. We have an appeal this afternoon regarding a housing accommodation located at 3133 Connecticut Avenue Northwest, Apartment Unit 115. The tenant petition number is RHTP 06286668. The appeal is styled Kenneth A. Mazur and Wendy Tiefenbacher, Tenants Petitioners versus B.F. Saul Property Company, Klingel Corporation, and B.F. Saul Company, Housing Providers Appellees. The Commission knows that there are parties seated before it and would ask that you identify yourselves for the record, beginning with the tenants.
Wendy Tiefenbacher.
Kenneth Mazur, tenant.
Richard Lutz, representing the Housing Provider Appellees.
Ms. Leach, are you also? You with Mr. Lux also?
She's observing today.
Observing, okay.
But not appearing.
Very good. I would briefly like to explain our procedures. The Commission's rules are largely similar to those of the D.C. Court of Appeals. Each party will have 20 minutes to present its case, beginning with the tenants' appellants. The tenants' appellants may reserve up to 5 minutes of your 20 minutes for rebuttal following the presentation of the housing providers' appellees. The housing providers' appellees must present all their arguments within 20 minutes and will have no rebuttal time. In our discretion, we may grant additional time depending on the number of questions that we may ask you and the elaboration that you may provide us in light of those questions. Our hearing is recorded on audio CD. We ask that you turn off all cell phones and other electronic equipment. Our decision will be issued in writing and sent to you as soon as we're able. In this proceeding, we do not request nor will we accept post-hearing submissions from either party. I'd like to ask the parties if they would be willing to engage in settlement negotiations. There's a substantial history of cases related to the Kennedy warrant that the Commission is addressing in as expeditious a manner as we can in light of the limited resources to address simply one case that has so many sub-cases. We believe it's in your mutual legal and economic interest to resolve this case as well as the cases related to the Kennedy warrant by settlement. Litigation presents an uncertainty of outcome and a clear risk of an adverse decision and subsequent loss to any party. The settlement process gives each party the opportunity to eliminate litigation risks, reduce costs, retain certainty in outcome, and become the active authors, not the passive recipients of their own final decisions. Simply put, rather than risk an adverse decision by the Commission and the likelihood of further costly, time-consuming litigation, the parties would control the outcome of this appeal with a certain outcome through settlement. We have a very able settlement officer, Ms. Dorothy Greer, who has an excellent track record in getting parties to resolve these issues to their mutual satisfaction. Mr. Mazur, are you interested in pursuing, at least attempting to pursue, some kind of settlement before we proceed further?
Shall I? Well, two-word answer is of course. I don't know if we have to do it through the able assistance of your mediator or directly. Either way, if I could just take a minute to explain. We think that most of the major issues that we have been concerned about are, history has dealt with them one way or another, or they're being perhaps dealt with in other cases. Now, we had another controversy with the same housing provider about a storage room. And this went on also since 2006. It was settled today, but about 1 year ago, 9 months ago, we entered into settlement discussions about that. And it took a long time. I won't say why, but yesterday we got the signed settlement agreement from the housing provider. We signed it right before this hearing. We went to the office and we paid him a check, which is full settlement of all claims and issues. We're satisfied. I hope they're satisfied. So based on that, about a week ago, we knew for certain that we were probably going to reach this agreement on the storage room. So that's why we waited so long. We did make a proposal to Mr. Lux's office that we discuss settling this case too, because we were that close in the past. And maybe, I don't know what their response is to that yet.
Mr. Lux, again, I understand your general reluctance in this case to settle. So,
that's not accurate. We've settled a lot of cases with County Warren residents. In this case, my client has not received any rent for years. And we will ask that the commission proceed with the hearing today. If Mr. Mazur and Ms. Tiefenbacher want to resume settlement discussions that were initiated years ago with respect to this case, although I will say, as we said in one of the other cases involving Mr. and Mrs. Nelson, we're not interested in settling just one case. It would have to be all pending matters in which they are involved. We're certainly willing to entertain that.
Okay.
But in light of the over $100,000 that my client is due in unpaid rent sitting in the court registry, we're not inclined at this point to delay further a hearing before the commission, nor do we need to. Mr. Mazur's an attorney. We don't need to take up the commission's resources to reach a settlement. He is correct. We were able to reach a settlement on the tail wagging the dog, so to speak, the storage unit, but that took a considerable amount of time as well. And so if we're able to reach a settlement before the commission decides this case, wonderful, but I don't want to delay this particular proceeding.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you for your discussion about this. Given the nature of this, the complicated history and nature of this case, it's probably, from our perspective here at least, in the best interests of many parties, not all, but certainly many parties, to resolve these issues. It's about time in some ways. Do any parties, either of you, have any preliminary matters? Mr. Lux, any preliminary matter?
No.
Mr. Mazur?
No.
Ms. Tiefenbacher? Okay. Mr. Mazur, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, I would.
How much? You got up to 5 minutes.
Well, we'll take all 5 minutes.
Okay, and so you get 15 minutes now, and then after Mr. Lux is done, you get another five. You got 5 minutes then after rebuttal.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Please begin.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners. This case basically is about three rent increases that we believe are invalid and that should not have been charged to us, about the reduction or elimination of certain services and facilities, and about certain violations of law, including the Rental Housing Act. We filed this appeal because we believe that many reversible errors were made at the hearing at the Office of Administrative Hearings that prevented us from prevailing on our claims. We hope not to take up too much time here, as we made our arguments in our appeal brief, and we rely on that. However, we would like to rebut the housing provider's brief in opposition because there are many inaccuracies in it. On this point, too, we won't waste time here on inaccuracies as to the law. Our brief states our understanding of the law and cites the precedents we base that on, and we ask your honors to compare what we say in our brief with what the respondents argue and to make your judgments based on your knowledge of the law. However, there are many other inaccuracies in the housing provider's brief. Namely, in issue after issue, they allege that we tenants did not present evidence or testimony or make arguments in our pleadings to the Office of Administrative Hearings or in
our... Ms. Eisenbacher, can I stop you there and tell you that?
Yes.
We're here because you've appealed the decision of the judge below.
Yes.
And so you have to tell us about the errors in the decision below as opposed to what you found in the housing provider's brief. If we don't hear that from you, then we can't make a decision on your case, which may or may not be favorable to you, but we're left with just the decision below. So if you could direct your comments to that, I'd appreciate it.
Well, Your Honor, we made our arguments in the brief on appeal, and we'd like to, if I just start talking about that, or my wife does, we'll just mess it up. If you're not going to choose to read what we submitted, we're sunk.
I didn't say that we were not going
right.
to read it. I said that you're making argument with regard to a responsive brief.
Yes.
That is not the purpose or point of an appeal hearing. An
okay.
appeal hearing is directly related to the decision from below and what error you found in that decision.
Okay. All right, we found a great number of errors. If we can, they're all in our brief on appeal, and we rely on that.
You know, Mr. Major, and I think what former Chairman Young is saying is we're pretty adept, I think, in looking at the record mm-hmm. and the final order and then comparing what the briefs claim about what was actually done
okay.
in the final order or in the hearing. We have tapes, we have everything.
Okay.
So I think what Mr. Young was saying, and he said it very clearly, was if there are, we can read your brief with respect to inaccuracies or whatever you claim in there, and that determination we can make on the record simply
yes.
because we have all the records and we can see what's accurate and what's not.
Right.
What supports your contentions and what doesn't. What I think is really important in this case, to me at least, is a lot of the issues related, in my view, and I don't know if Mr. Young shares this because he's really, really so knowledgeable about these cases, but I think what Judge Long was saying was she said, you know, you've got a lot of evidence. You're trying to provide all this evidence of illegal rent adjustments, and I'm unable to link these rent ceilings that you claim were being implemented in these rent adjustments. I'm unable to determine which rent ceilings were being used for each rent adjustment, mm-hmm. and you gave us all this evidence about rent ceiling adjustments, but I'm having real trouble, according to Judge Long, in understanding which rent ceiling was mm-hmm. taken in 2004, 2005, 2006. So the question that I have is, why was Judge Long wrong in saying, you know, you gave us a lot of evidence, but you failed to create the important link that she needed between the rent ceiling adjustment taken several years ago and the current rent increase. And I think, why was, in your view, was she legally wrong in determining that your evidence that you presented simply, yeah, there was a lot of evidence, it just didn't happen to pertain clearly to the things that you were being, that you were claiming, the illegal rent adjustments that you were claiming. Do you understand
yes,
what I'm saying?
I think so, yes.
Okay, so if you could answer that for us,
right.
I think that would be very helpful.
Well, as far as I can see, the rent increase notices and the ceiling, rent ceiling increase notices that came to us, did not state which certificate of election they were based on. So it was, I said this to Judge Long, well, we think it's this one, but we don't know for sure because Only the housing provider.
If you can, just talk, make sure you...
Only the housing provider knows that for sure, and we would like to get to the bottom of that, but...
Isn't the hearing the place to determine that, where you have the opportunity to...
Yes, but what I'm saying is the documents in themselves didn't show it.
But testimony would, wouldn't it? I mean, couldn't you have established, I mean, the burden's on you, if you attack a rent adjustment, the burden's on you to show that it was illegal for some reason.
I think what we failed to do directly at that hearing was to submit the rent increase letters. We had them in our hand.
You mean the notices of rent increase?
Yes. We had them in our hand. The judge was asking us questions about dates, and we were responding to them, and we thought that they all got in at the end. But I may be wrong on this. I think Mr. Lux then made a motion that they weren't submitted. The judge had no basis to base her our rent increases on, or the ceilings. But getting back to your question, I still don't know which certificate of election applied to Rich rent increase notice. It's not clear. I don't know. And we did our best guess at that, but like you said, the certificates of election were issued on such and such a date, and we're arguing they were not issued within time, but that's a separate issue. And then sometime later we got the notice, but they don't exactly correlate.
But I guess the question I still have, notwithstanding what you just said, is that the burden isn't on Mr. Lux or the housing provider to make the link.
Mm-hmm.
The burden is on you to claim that the adjustment was illegal because it was based on some imperfected rent ceiling adjustment.
Right.
And without the link, as I read Judge Long's opinion, which was, I thought, in my view, fairly explicit in it, in saying you did provide a number of rent ceiling evidence of a number of rent ceiling adjustments. What you failed to do, according to Judge Long, was to provide evidence of any notices of any rent ceiling adjustment, any written notices that you received of a rent adjustment, or even what that rent adjustment was being based on, what rent ceiling adjustment was that based on. So you didn't provide any evidence of notices that you even received notice. Mm-hmm. And secondly, you were unable to, because of that, the judge was unable to link, to find the source of the illegality, because if there was an imperfected rent ceiling adjustment, or a rent ceiling adjustment that was correctly perfected, she was unable to determine from the evidence you presented, well, what is this rent adjustment you're complaining about? What's the problem there? If it is the rent ceiling, something about the rent ceiling, please link whatever the adjustment is to the rent ceiling that was taken. Because if you provide simply, look, they made all of these rent ceilings, you know, they got all these rent ceilings, and judge, pick and choose, you'll be able to see here there was $500, and that's one that I think belongs over here.
Right.
The burden is clearly on you to say, look, this is the link. Now, if you couldn't establish the link, it's not up to the judge to kind of make a guess and say, well, I guess you gave us all this evidence, and I guess I'll go hunt and fish for it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do, but I think it's up to the... If it's not written clearly in the rent adjustment notice, then...
But if the notice isn't part of the record, then we've got a problem.
Okay, well, that's the crux of it, as we address in our appeal. And that's, I guess, our mistake. But what we... If that were really the problem, and it... Judge Long could have easily said, wait a minute, you've been quoting from these letters for the past 2 days. Didn't you mean to really hand them over? And everyone had a copy in advance, too, obviously. So if we didn't formally enter them into evidence, that was her problem. But my response is, one, we were quoting from them in the hearing, and we cite them here. Secondly, at the end we said, okay, certain exhibits she knocked out, and we moved to enter everything else, and she acknowledged that she understood we were moving to enter every other exhibit that we had given to them, and I don't know that there was any adverse ruling on that ever. Third, when the judge made a big deal about that, oh, you didn't submit those letters. A, we said, well, here they are. Can you reopen the record and submit it now? And she said, in particular, because we thought, on the one hand, we had submitted everything. We can show them to you now. Well, when she refused that, it was still available at any time to just reopen the record and say if those are the really important ones. We were there. It's just a strict formality in the judge's mind that we didn't submit them, easily overcome at that time. And I think that would have provided the link. And as I said, orally, we were talking about that link at the hearing.
Andrew, any questions? Mr. Young, do you want to?
We actually have the dates and the actual times when we talked about it, and two of the letters are our exhibits, and the third was part of our tentative petition.
Oh, if I could add that, there are three rent increases at issue in our claims, and for one of them at least, Judge Long did say, okay, you have submitted enough evidence of that rent increase for her to go forward. Now, she tossed that out for other reasons that were also appealing, but at least for that, one out of three, even the judge clearly said we had submitted enough evidence of that rent increase.
And we even have like the time that she said it on the tape.
Right.
Okay.
And if that was an example.
And the other two were in our hands, they were in their hands. And if it was a big deal, we could have submitted them at any time.
Let me ask you real quick, just very quickly on another issue, the substantial reduction in services. There was, as I understood it, Judge Long was very clear when she said, what you were claiming is a reduction in services were a reduction in amenities that were not part of your rent. And in addition to which the dust and the noise that you objected to weren't really, you were unable to relate them to a particular service that was being provided as part of your rent. Mm-hmm. So how would you, and so there are legal, we have a certain legal standards for determining what is a related service and what isn't. How was Judge Long wrong in determining that A, amenities are not related services? I mean, the amenities you pointed to, the market, etc., they weren't part of your rent. They were simply amenities that happened to be in the building or around the building. And this mm-hmm. dust and noise issue, what is the error there that you saw in her determination? Just briefly, if you could.
Okay.
Well, it's, you know, she had said that we presented no evidence of, you know, rent being charged during the period when the noise occurred, and so it was leaving the court to speculate what amounts to consider, but that's really not true. What is true that several times in pleadings and at the hearing we asked for a determination of violations of the Rental Housing Act. And there were definite violations of the Rental Housing Act, and then a determination of damages. But we did, in fact, specify the rents being charged during the relevant period at our post-hearing and closing argument. We not only stated the rents charged, but also referred to evidence of those rents.
I think you're missing the point.
May I respond also?
No, I think I got your point. I guess my question is how How are we supposed to determine that an amenity is a related service or a related facility? And secondly, how did dust and noise, without relating the dust and noise to a particular service that was being provided, how can we say that Judge Long was wrong in saying there was no evidence that the noise and dust was related to any services that you, and it certainly wasn't related to the amenities that you claimed were related services. So that's what I'd like quick to focus on.
Okay. Well, on the two points, on the first point first, the store, the market, and other amenities. Now, the judge seems to accept the argument of the housing provider that I think there were certain listings on the of amenities in the amended in the registration, amended registration or original registration, whatever. Their argument is that's it. Those are the amenities, the only amenities that can be considered. We say no. The law doesn't say that. We don't think there's any basis in holding it just to whatever happens to be in these registration forms that we never saw. We depended on amenities, on what was in the pamphlets that were given to us when we moved in, on what they, when they showed us around the place, what they pointed out.
If the pamphlet showed you that there was a bus stop in front of the building, which Metro chose to remove, mm-hmm. would you be able to sue the housing provider for the removal of the bus stop?
That's a much weaker case. I would say probably not.
Okay. So there's a store or a restaurant or a cleaning service.
Yes.
Is it the housing provider's cleaning service or store? You make a point in your notice of appeal where you state that the owner, mm-hmm. and that's your words, owner of the store would listen to special requests for things.
Yes.
So suppose the owner went bankrupt. Was the housing provider obligated to open the BSL store in the space?
Maybe so, or at least if not, we get it. No, they're not. But it's a loss of amenity, especially when they pointed that out as the pride and joy of the Kennedy Warren, and it was one of the main reasons we moved in.
Plus, also having a bus stop is a bus stop is open to anybody. These services were not. The store was only for residents of the Kennedy Warren, for people who signed leases to live at the Kennedy Warren. Every amenity that we suggested was not open to the general public, like a store.
How was it accessible?
What do you mean?
Could you go in from the street?
No.
No.
Okay.
No. You had to live in the building, and you had to have signed a lease to live in the building to have those amenities.
And were these amenities a part of the lease? Were they listed in the lease agreement?
When we were showed the apartment before we signed the lease, we were showed everything that was offered to us. You know, they showed us what the services that they were offering tenants who signed leases to live in the building.
Right. And the bottom line is, I don't think it was in the lease. But I don't think some of the amenities that they clearly identified as amenities
are in the lease
either. So
okay.
Well, you got 5 minutes following Mr. Luck's presentation for rebuttal. And
may I answer the rest of your question though, about the noise and the dust?
If you 1 minute, you got.
Sure. Yeah. I think we made that argument also in our pleadings, but as I would recall them, it went to the habitability,
yeah.
Yes, of the apartment, and it went to quiet enjoyment. Now, I remember from law school, I don't do this kind of law at all,
right.
But I know quiet enjoyment typically means something else. It means nobody else is going to argue about my title to it. But there were cases in the district that said quiet, and other jurisdictions, quiet enjoyment goes beyond that in this case. It could be literally the layman's idea of being able to live in your apartment without all these disturbances.
Understood. Well, isn't that a more appropriately litigated in superior court, which is then it's a con. I mean, we don't. There's nothing in the Rental Housing Act that talks about quiet enjoyment as being a related service or facility. There's at least to my knowledge, and that's really isn't a more appropriate venue. Can we even consider quiet enjoyment here when it's, you know, when it's kind of tough without evidence to show that that was related to a specific service or facility? Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got to somehow anchor these claims somewhere in the act. We can't simply say quiet enjoyment. Yes, I agree with you. Quiet enjoyment was one of those puzzling things early on in a property course, but if we can't anchor it in the act, then we've got a problem here. Let me just proceed with Mr. Lux. Oh, okay. Mr. Lux.
Can I ask you a little question before we go
further? Absolutely, sir.
There are a couple of issues that you raised in your notice of appeal that I think we could sort of quickly dispose of. With regard to subpoenas, the ALJ denied your request for subpoenas. The question I have is, did you file an interlocutory appeal?
No, we didn't, Commissioner. I don't even remember the issue of subpoenas coming up.
Well, I think it's in your notice of appeal.
Oh.
And second of all, with regard to the CI...
No, we didn't.
With regard to the CI, you complained that the mm-hmm. judge erred because she didn't take into account the decision and order issued by the hearing examiner in the CI, and because the housing provider didn't register the...
Yes.
The claim within 30 days that he lost it.
Yes.
And I think what happened in that was that the ALJ said that it was on appeal, and perhaps she could have been more fulsome in her explanation, mm-hmm. but I think she was relying on a case called Hansen versus the Rental Housing Commission, which indicates that until the full judicial process has gone through, that a stay is automatic and that there is no force and effect of a decision. Does that make it a little bit more clear?
Oh, well, what you're saying makes it clear. However, appeal or not, they implemented the charges based on that. So that should have been stayed too. I mean, we were our claim is based on the actual. We have to reach into our pocket and pay that $179 a month.
Right. Because the regulations permit after a certain period that they can implement that. Subject to review, full judicial review.
But then we couldn't do anything about it, then, you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that it would have had to have gone through full judicial review, mm-hmm. and if they had been charging you that, and then it was later denied by that judicial review, they would have had to have refunded the money. Mm-hmm. But because it was stayed, they didn't have the right to perfect it, as you call it, which is really, but that was what was there. That was what happened there. Does that mm-hmm. make it a little bit more clear to you? I mean, I'm just trying to deal with these issues that are, you know, sort of in line of what you complained about and to respond to them.
And they're allowed to charge money before it's perfected?
They're allowed to do it after a certain number of days, yes.
Okay.
That's what the rules permit.
And I think we're arguing against that. I mean, you're telling me that, and that's one of our arguments, that it shouldn't be that way.
All right. Okay. You have 5 minutes after Mr. Lux. Mr. Lux, please.
Thank you, Commissioner. Richard Lux, representing the housing provider, Appalese. Simply for the record, BSO Property Company, as we argued below, really is not a housing provider, but be that as it may, I just want to read three short passages from the decision of Judge Long, keeping in mind that Judge Long was not only the principal administrative law judge for rental housing cases in the Office of Administrative Hearings, but a former member, a longtime member of the Rental Housing Commission. And if there was anyone at the Office of Administrative Hearings who understood the Rental Housing Act better, I don't know who that would have been. But she also understood the procedural rules under the D.C. Administrative Procedures Act, which, as Commissioner Szigeti-Mazak has pointed out, placed the burden of proof on the petitioners. It's not her obligation, nor is it permissible for her to have become an advocate for the petitioners, which is apparently what they're asking or suggesting should have been done or to tell them how to present their case, although some judges will assist petitioners who are trying to reach a certain goal. We have an attorney here who, although perhaps not familiar with this particular kind of procedure, was certainly familiar enough, as the commission has noted, to create a substantial record and nevertheless failed to do the quintessential step of presenting the evidence that was necessary even to make a prima facie case. In her decision, Judge Long says at page 10, with respect to the 2004 increase, for the foregoing reasons, the tenants did not meet their burden of proving that the rent increase implemented on November 1, 2004 was improper. They did not introduce into evidence the notice that they received in September 2004 for the rent increase effective on November 1, 2004, or offer testimony concerning the contents of the notice, such as the source and amount of the rent increase, the rent or rent ceiling before the housing providers increased the rent, and they did not indicate what, if any, certificate of election the housing providers used to increase the rent on November 1, 2004. She goes on page 11 with respect to the increase for 2005 and says attendance proof for their claim that the November 1, 2005 rent increase was improper suffered many of the deficiencies in their proof for the November 1, 2004 rent increase. The tenants did not offer evidence concerning the amount of the rent increase, and they did not identify the rent charged or rent ceiling that was in place before the housing providers implemented the rent increase on November 1, 2005. She does, at the bottom of page 11, indicate that the tenants introduced a certificate of election date stamped January 27, 2005. However, at the top of page 12, she says, however, there was no testimony linking either exhibit to the November 1, 2005 rent increase. And then again, with respect to the 2006 increase, she says the tenants did not introduce the notice of rent increase or testify concerning the contents of the notice. The tenants did not provide evidence of the rent charge before or after the rent increase. Mr. Mazur admitted today that they failed to introduce the rent increase notices. The decision states very clearly that they failed to introduce not only the rent increase notices, but any evidence or testimony about the rent increases. Without that information, which the judge was neither permitted nor able to pull out of thin air, they simply failed to establish their burden of proof as to any of the elements in this case or any of their claims. My only other comment is that the KW Little store was not just for tenants. The lease that was in the record reflects that fact. Anybody could use it, as is not unusual in these cases, but there was no testimony in the record or evidence in the record with respect to that issue, and so it's not something the commission really need to concern itself with. Based on that, commissioners, we will rest on the remainder of what is in our brief, subject to any questions you may have. Thank you.
Mr. Young?
I have no questions.
Yes.
No, I. Okay. I have one question, Mr. Lux, which is the way that Judge Long distinguishes Grant v. Gelman in this case is on the basis that, as I understand it, that in Grant v. Gelman, the tenants submitted at least evidence of notice, and they were able to link the rent ceiling increase to the notice and the rent adjustment. Is that how you understand her use of Grant v. Gelman in that case?
Yes, and that was absolutely paramount to Grant v. Gelman because the commission's ruling in Grant v. Gelman, which the commission
and you,
don't
and,
agree
and,
with, required that showing.
Understood. But that's how she distinguished it, and you
yes.
agree with that distinction.
Yes.
You agree with her distinction that that's the distinction is a proper distinction in that case between Grant v. Gelman.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, sir, do you have Mr. Mazur, you have 5 minutes. And if you could, try to relate it back to what Mr. Lux Lux's points are, don't try not to raise, re-argue things that, that Mr. Lux didn't talk about.
Correct.
Please.
Okay, understood.
Sir.
First of all, a small aside, I don't know what Mr. Lux is talking about the little store. You cannot get into our building unless you go through a doorman, and regardless whether the doorman's there or not there, you have to go to the front desk, and people don't come in off the street and say, I want to use the little store. The little store was inside of all that. It was only available to residents, or I guess guests of residents who were there temporarily. That's a minor point, but that's it. The other big question is, I'll just make this really short, and it's somewhat repetitive, about the link between the certificates of election and our rent letters. Again, we were referring to those rent increase letters, ceiling and rent increase, during the hearing. And we thought everyone had a copy, that was enough, and we moved to get all of our exhibits in. But the key question is that link. And we're arguing that through a fault in the rent increase letters, it never said which certificates of election they're keyed to. So we did our best, and we weren't silent on this point. We went on and on at the hearing about, well, we think it's this one because the dates are the same, or the CPIW percentage is the same. So we believe this is the one that's linked to that one, but we couldn't prove it, and that's not because of our fault. It's because of the deficiency of information in their rent increase letter.
But again, it would seem to me, based on and also on what Mr. Young, both of our points are, if there is uncertainty, then it seems to me that the burden is on you, the tenant, the proponent of the claim, to say, call witnesses, get as much information as discovery through the discovery process as you can before you even get to the hearing.
Right.
And based on all of that, introduce testimony from somebody or some source that says, well, in this particular November 1st, 2005, the rent ceiling that we predicated our rent increase on was X. And that seems to me to be part of the discovery process, that when you keep saying, we didn't know, well, the judge didn't think you knew either.
But we're saying that's a flaw in their letter.
But can't you get the letter? The letter was issued by somebody, that is a landlord.
Mm-hmm.
Can't you call witnesses that, or through cross-examination of their witnesses, that would establish what the meaning was in those letters that you claim is so ambiguous? If something's ambiguous, I would want to know, what do they mean by this? And I would do my best, I think, to find out through discovery, that is witnesses and oral testimony and writings and emails and subpoenaing whatever documents you want to subpoena, business records, that you could then establish, I think here there's a link, Your Honor. What I think what happened here from Judge Long's discussion was you gave a whole lot of rent ceiling increases, and you said, we're not really sure which one this was predicated on, but we think it's wrong. Mm-hmm. And she's going, well, can you show me that? And you go, we don't know, because the notice itself is vague.
Right.
If I were the judge, I'd say, that's all you got?
Yeah,
because I would want to know what that, from somebody who knows what that means.
Well, you see, our argument was, I understand that, the way we wanted to proceed was forget about the rent increase letters for a time. Our main argument was that the certificates of election were not perfected in a timely manner, therefore invalid. Then, which one is linked? If that CE is knocked out, then the whole rent should be knocked out.
Right.
Any rent increase letter based on it. So we were our line of attack was with the CEs, and we never really got a chance to get to the other. Secondly, I think it's a legal defect for the landlord not to properly identify which in the rent increase letter, which one it's linked to, certificate of election it's linked to. Failing to do that, the rent increase letter itself should be deemed invalid on its face. And that's what we had to go with. Third, we were, discovery from step A was knocked out completely. We were not allowed to just discover anything. And we think, now how are we going to, at this stage, or if we go on to Court of Appeals, it's too late for discovery then. Because there should be issues of law, not issues of fact, like, yeah, I suppose. And we were knocked out of the park from square one. We wanted reasonable, limited discovery, and that was not allowed at all.
I was going to say we did submit statements by five other tenants about the rent, them also, you know, not seeing any postings or anything about a rent increase. And again, we were shut down immediately. But we don't want it to seem as if we just went there and said, "Oh, that we have. There's some letter. There's some connection." I mean, we really got it so close, and it probably was the correct one. It's not like it was just this vague thing, and we were just throwing anything at the wall. But without even limited, reasonable discovery, I mean, yeah, it was a shot in the dark. So, but it was very, very, very close, and for all intents and purposes, it was probably the correct connections.
Would you say is it fair to say that your primary claim, because you make dozens of them, that your primary claim goes to the fact that the judge, that you believe that Judge Long improperly restricted discovery in this case? Is that what this whole thing is hinged on? That, in other words, what I was just saying to you in terms of how to authenticate documents, etc., that whole route was foreclosed. So it's really a procedural due process question that's the underlying claim in this whole.
Well, I can't say it's, I don't want it, our whole claim, our whole appeal to be based on that.
It seems to me that claim, if you were unable to present or subpoena or do certain things that would allow you to provide, to submit evidence in support of what I was saying you lacked evidence on, it would seem to me that that's a pretty major claim.
Mr. Segedi-Mazak, our commissioner, I don't want to say it's our underlying claim.
No, I understand. You've got plenty of them. And they all are merit. You know, they. I,
right.
You all claim you believe they're meritorious.
If you take this heavy document, I think the majority of it is, or a good portion of it is, about discovery, and we make. Okay. What we think are good issues in it. Yes.
Okay. Commissioner, that was not an issue, and I respectfully request an opportunity to make a statement. That was not an issue they raised in their argument. That's also not an issue the commission can decide.
Okay.
Because the rules of the Office of Administrative Hearing vest discretion in the judge as to whether discovery is permitted or not.
Right.
And that's not something the commission could overturn absent abuse of discretion. In this case, that can't be demonstrated because the appellants have told this commission they had the notices of rent increase, which is a missing element.
I'm just, if you'll excuse me, what I was trying to do was trying to figure out where this was going, because, again, Mr. Mazur, I don't doubt the merits of what you know, the merits of what you're claiming, okay? The way you argue some of this, I worry that we
it's not, look, for example, quiet enjoyment. There's mm-hmm. certain things that are better suited for a superior court case, you know, than this administrative hearing where we have the act to go on. Mm-hmm. And so questions like procedural due process, claims, discovery, et cetera, are we are bound by the Administrative Procedures Act as OAHs, mm-hmm. but OAH, what the judge in her discretion does as an OAH judge, as long as it's not, unless you claim there was an abuse, and I dare say I sometimes in reading your brief, it's difficult for me to figure out kind of the arguments you're making, because there are a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much we can reach in your briefs based on our jurisdictional issue. You know, we are circumscribed in our jurisdiction.
Okay. Well,
do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
Now, doesn't mean that the Court of Appeals isn't, but it does mean that we, and it doesn't mean that other courts would be similarly circumscribed, but we may find it hard to reach some of these issues.
Okay. Well, not conceding the argument about the noise and the dust and all on our part right now, but that's a relatively minor claim among our major claims.
Okay.
So even if you say you don't have jurisdiction or competence over that one issue, there are still
right. Oh no, there's plenty of grist for a lot of grist for the mill on this thing. So
right.
No, there's plenty. Don't get me wrong, but I just want to say that that's why I backed into it, because so much of the notice of appeal is, at least to me, was it has to be grounded in the act, and I just want to make sure that you know that's the limit of our jurisdiction. If it can't be grounded somewhere, we can't find a grounding.
Yes,
we can't deal with it. You know. So,
okay.
But I think again, you did. That's not a comment on the quality of your brief. It's just my comment on some of the things you raised are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, one last, go on.
No, I was just going to say, we just really hope that you'll look at for the violations of the Rental Housing Act and support us.
Yes, ma'am. Of course, that's our charge, of course. Yes, ma'am, absolutely.
And I hope in the future, tenants have a complaint or a claim or a gripe, and every piece of advice they get, I think it's still true today, is file a tenant petition. And thereby, the only way to do it, if you really have a rental claim, is to withhold the rent, wait to get sued, which is a really unfortunate situation, go to landlord-tenant court and get a stay, and then do this procedure through the administrative. Mm-hmm. If I knew then what I know now, I would be in superior court right now and not have done that, but no one has told that.
I understand.
So.
Believe me, we see from up here the brilliance of the act and sometimes how implementing it is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so but I really, we all appreciate what you submitted, and mm-hmm. we will try to get out an opinion as quickly as we can. Again, I'm not going to editorialize this again, but Mr. Young, who's most familiar with these cases,
mm-hmm.
And the commission believe that there, you know, when there's goodwill between the parties to try to reach some kind of, let's get this settled after all these years, you know, hopefully, you know, there's some grounds, you know, please keep the discussions up during our deliberations, and I think our happiest moment will be when there are settlements in the air, and you know, the parties are happy the parties are satisfied that the settlements reflect something that is mutually agreed on. So,
okay.
Thank you. It's now 2:55, and we are adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.